Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me tonight, our uptown girl by way of Missouri, so I guess it's a little less uptown and more, we'll say cross-country will be nice. Anyway, it's Jamie. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Scott. Good to be back.
It is good to have you back, and I'm already having fond memories of when the two of us combined before, because we are here to kick off our podcast coverage of The Boys Season 3, which actually turns out to be the first three episodes of, well, the season. How eloquent we are to begin this podcast. All right, so I have a feeling if I don't focus, it's going to be rambly, so let's focus on the first episode here, which was titled Payback. Payback, which is the name of the super team or super group. I'll say super team. Super group sounds like I'm talking about Asia or something, some band from the 80s or something. Power Station, super group. Which you probably were a fan of Power Station, right? You had some Duran Duran members in there.
One or two. It's fine.
Worked in Duran Duran in another podcast. Anyway, the name of the super team that preceded the seven. Now, while The Boys is mainly riffed on DC properties, at least on the TV series, for a lot of its dark and subversive parodies, this is where Marvel starts to get some more smackdowns, as Payback is first and foremost a kind of ridiculous riff on the Avengers. It's particularly amusing nowadays, considering just how huge the Avengers have become in popular culture due to the movies, as opposed to pre-MCU. But speaking of movies, we actually kick off this episode, well, we're back to lampooning the DCEU and the Justice League movie with the premiere of Dawn of the Seven. Not to be confused with the dumbest title in DC movie history, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Once they went with the V there, oh, you know what? There's an entire two-hour podcast all about that, so we can go back and find it. It's actually very good. And then we did a segment on the uncut version. Oh, anyway. Now, whether it was planned or not, having Charlize Theron unexpectedly show up in the initial clip as Stormfront in the movie, I think was kind of a fortuitous stroke of good luck. Let's just say this is not the first comic book property Charlize Theron has unexpectedly popped up in this past year. See, that way I haven't spoiled it, I think, because people haven't seen certain movies like you.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. You know, what could he be talking about? Was she in Batman? No. but I am enjoying the fact, and it's that we're back to, oh, that's right. they're still making a movie, or at this point, I guess the movie's been made because it's the premiere of the movie, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, yep. We get to see more women walk in heels in cities left in rubble.
Well, that's what they do. I also love that afterwards, that one little swipe, I thought they took a Disney Plus when they make a reference to the streaming Vought Plus.
And I went, sign me up. What's another one?
I was thinking, I bet the Amazon Prime boys, they probably enjoyed that little joke there. So we know that Butcher and most of the boys have gone sort of legit, working for the Bureau of Superhero Affairs. I guess they got Huey as their liaison. And while he's not exactly their boss, but it's certainly has been a power shift in the dynamic there. And this is all under Congresswoman Victoria Newman's purview. The woman that we learned at the end of season two is actually a head poppin' super self. And she is working with or for Stan, Edgar, and Vought. I remember us talking about her back in season two, and there was the, I don't know how we felt about it. I think we were kind of like, okay, you're kind of doing a slight parody of like Alexandria,
Ocasio, of Cortez. Yeah, there was definitely some parallels.
Definitely influence. Now, I don't see that as a negative.
Do you think that? I mean, do you think Alexandria is as much of a sandwich steal as Congresswoman Vic Newman is? I mean, the woman can't leave her hands off of a man's sandwich. Well, just say it. Go buy your own.
AOC is a fellow New Yorker like myself, so I'm going to say yes because, you know, we're all about stealing from other people.
We're all about stealing sandwiches. Yeah. That's how we roll.
Bagels, pizza slices, you know, steal, steal, steal. So, as part of one of these missions, we have Frenchie. I always get confused if we should be calling him Frenchie or Sergi, but I'm so used to calling him Frenchie. I just call him Frenchie. That's just the way I refer to him. Frenchie and Kimiko infiltrate a seriously swinging party where there may be nefarious soup things are happening. And okay, all right, we're gonna have to talk about that scene.
we're gonna have to because on top of gratuitous party tricks. You know, there's always the hazard when you have a party that there's going to be some cleanup.
So, okay.
Oh, man. Now, I mean, how do you, like, where do you start? You start this, Scott. Where does this start?
Well, it didn't start where I thought it was going to start. I know that. As far as how we're going to start talking about, you know what? Everyone who's listening has already seen the scene. You know,
yep.
Forgive me if I don't necessarily want to go into a play-by-play. However, for the amusement of y'all, let me tell you what happened as far as watching it is concerned. Jamie had already seen the episode before I had. She was aware of what happened here. I knew something happened of that, you know, had gotten people's dander. Well, maybe it might not have gotten their danders up, and maybe might have made some things shrink. I don't know. No pun intended. But I knew something was coming. So I'm watching, and we're about 11 minutes and change into it. And we have a character, a soup in it, who's basically a takeoff on, well, you could say it's a takeoff on Adam or Adam Smasher, depending which one, because, or if you want to go Marvel, it's, you know, Ant-Man / Goliath. He's not a shapeshifter, he's a size shifter. Someone who can be shrink down to microscopic size or even be a giant, apparently. Also, Elastigirl from the Doom Patrol has that ability. It's one of the shrinking superheroes. And once we get to the point where, well, you see this thing of these folds of flesh, and it took me a second to realize what it was. Cause I thought he was going to be taking a different entrance point, which wouldn't have been fun, which would have been kind of problematic to watch as well. I was expecting it to be something else. And then I realized where they were going, and I hit pause. Once I realized, I contacted Jamie. And I was basically, I'm like 12 minutes in, I stopped it, I can't, can you tell me how long, can I just skip ahead a couple minutes? Can I just like put my hands over my eyes and just hit fast forward and then look up and then maybe whatever. Is there a way, is it over? And you kept on me. It's like, no, yeah, you have to watch it. Even if you have to watch it through your fingers, you have to watch.
You gotta do it. And now's the time.
Now, I can remember a few other things in my life that I just like, I was like, all right, I don't really want to. I mean, there was the weird, weird night I decided, you know, and I didn't start until like 2 something in the morning. And I decided to marathon the three Human Centipede movies. not recommended. Although I will say the second one.
You set the night aside for it, huh?
Oh, yeah. Although I will say the second one is interesting because it's all like German expressionism. It's like, well, what the hell? Anyway, But that was one where I was like going, I can't look at the screen, but I have to do like the Clockwork Orange thing to my face and my eyes and just force myself to watch it. So, okay, I unpaused it, and it didn't turn out to be as bad as I was expecting it to be. It was more the anticipation of it, especially when they had already established that the character, just by showing the character sneeze earlier, I knew it was going to be a sneeze. And then it was at that moment I got angry because I remember someone on Facebook in their status update just had the phrase, I didn't even mention the boys, I don't think, but I knew this is someone who would be watching the boys. And he had like something like, talk about a bad time to sneeze or something like that. And I'm like going, okay, I already know, you know, it's Pavlov's sneeze. I already know, not Pavlov, Chekhov's sneeze. Sorry. Where's Dan to correct me? I knew where, what was going to happen. And I'm just like, how is this going to, I was like, oh, okay. Oh, he just all blew up. Okay. Cause that could have been, they could have done that in a word. In a worse way, which would have just been scarring. I mean, for the viewers, I mean.
Well, I mean, you know, let's just cut to the chase. You know, he could have walked around, you know, a Munich, but this is the boys. They go big or they go home.
Yeah. I was just afraid we were going to see something, just the specific part be ruptured, yeah, and explode, which would have been like,
nope, we're going to go with almost all of the parts.
Yeah, all that. See, fine with that. Blow up the entire body. I'm good with that. Or most of it. Blow up just that thing. Because, you know, we've already established there's a character on this show who actually had his dick frozen off.
So, exactly.
Which they actually make a point of referencing at one point, just to remind us in case we had forgotten. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Well, and I, you know, they have no problems making things bloody and gory and quick and funny. And I'm not really entirely sure. Not really entirely sure that this is one of those situations that you can just like easily walk away from. I mean, he did almost overdose in a baggie of cocaine shortly following this, but I bet he doesn't go crawling up any orifices anytime soon.
I'm not sure he's going to be crawling up anything anytime soon at this point. It was also very dick-centric scene, because, you know, we already got that rather massive bit of male nudity earlier in the in the scene, and then we get that, and then, which I almost think that was put there just to put that image in our minds, even though that wasn't the member in question, so to speak. But it's, hey, in case you don't remember what these things look like, you know, if there's anyone out there, you know, it's been a while or something.
You had a momentary lapse. Here it is again.
Something like that's going to be blowed up good, you know, in a couple minutes. Oh,
well,
Lord.
they're really just getting us warmed up, because we know how these writers, we know how the writers work. We know where certain parts of the story are going to go. They're really just warming us up.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that guy was feeling warmed up for a while there. Yeah, so I think that's where we know they. Of course, if you're gonna cut to credits, it's gonna be after that scene. And then I think I'm not really looking at this as recapping it in any way. I'm just remembering certain things about it. And I know we go from there to the kind of a Huey sequence, and it's more about the fact they're using Uptown Girl, which does get used a few times. You know, it gets used quite a bit here. And it did is make me think, remind me that Huey's a Billy Joel fan, and then also reminded me, even more so later on, how angry I still continued to be.
Didn't get your Stormfront.
That they don't play Stormfront. Although, I brought up with Brian, I don't know if it was off recording or while we were talking about Stranger Things a few days ago, and it occurred to me, you know, it's possible that, you know, I mean, obviously they have to get the licensing and the okay to use songs, whatever. Billy might have been, Yeah, you know what? You can use these other things. I'm fine with that. Maybe not use one of my songs to associate with a Nazi.
With a Nazi.
That might be where I gotta draw the line. Because the more I thought about it, the more that actually made sense to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces that fall into place there.
Yeah, the more I thought
You're
about it,
onto something.
it's like yeah, it was like Kate Bush giving the okay for the song for Stranger Things because she's a fan and it made sense, it works. But if it had been used in a different kind of way, that was like more like highlighting some real piece of shit, she would have been like, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah.
So we get that, and I thought we were establishing what's going on with him, and a lot of this episode is set up. It's a very set up centric episode. It's reminding us or informing us in more cases where everybody is and what they're doing at this point and how the story is going to proceed from there. So that way we're seeing what's going on with Huey, and like when we see Butcher going to visit the kid Ryan at Grace's retreat, that way we know what's been going on with them and how he's been making regular visits to see, well, it's not his son, I guess, technically, because it's Homelander's son, but he was kind of raising him initially like he was his son, wasn't he?
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because as a anti-fatherhood, as he as the character was very sure to to embody, he's kind of changing his tune and doing a good job at dadding things.
Right. Oh, and I think I just misspoke a moment ago, just like seconds ago. And correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think he ever actually raised him because didn't sh weren't the two of them separated
Right.
before
He
his
he
because the
never
whole,
did.
yeah,
He's
he never
just
raised him. I
no,
misspoke
he's
there.
just falling into he's well he helps stash him away and keep him safe.
Right.
With a with was it Grace?
Yes.
That and so he's in hiding and keeping him safe and he's going and seeing him and being, emotional support and looks like he's getting a little bit attached.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I just wanted to make sure because every once in a while if you make a rather major goof like I just almost did, someone's gonna call you out for it. I don't want to be called out for that one because I knew I made a mistake right when I said like no, he wasn't raising him. She had already left him before that had happened. Okay. I kind of want to talk about Homelander here because
There's a lot going on.
the thing with Homelander is with him there, and it's a credit to both the actor and the writing of the character, especially when you're watching this very fir the first episode, and this continues obviously on throughout the three, but especially in the first half of this one. There is always consistent, constant, however you want to phrase it, and a feeling of impending menace or violence with him
Oh, man.
in every scene that we see him in. And even if and it's and it's funny because specifically nothing like that happens, but there's this overwhelming threat, and you just can feel it in every slight glare and every flinch and every twitch, and it's as we go through these three episodes, all three episodes, and we realize, okay, home, at this point, at least for these three, Homelander is really taking the position as he is the villain of the show. Not that he wasn't before, he certainly was, but now he is center stage, the villain of the show.
Well, he always had he obviously was always in a villain role, but there's a difference in his character and how his character is being played because before we knew the power he had, we knew that he was an ass, we knew that he would and could and will control people, that he's not really a hero. We know of the things he's done behind the scenes. But when he gets in front of a crowd of people before and we would see him smile, the smile and the joy he had was because he was receiving accolades and adoration and he was genuinely happy in front of people getting the attention. But now we see him in front of people and we can clearly see that the smile is fake and the twinkle in the eye is really freaking creepy because there's something off. It's the control that he had seems seems to be gone, it makes him a little bit more dangerous.
Well, if memory serves, I mean, the breaking of his psyche in that sense had happened before this season. Wasn't there a scene in season two when, and it's more him imagining, if I'm remembering correctly, doesn't he pretty much, is he it's been so long, because I didn't rewatch season two, so please correct me if I'm wrong.
Are you talking about the mass crowd casualty?
Yes.
Yes.
That's imagined, or does he actually do that? Because now I'm kind of forgetting.
It was one of those flashes of, that's what he wanted to do.
That's what I thought. I just want to make sure, because I didn't want to say when he imagines.
Yeah, his disdain for the weak, immortal human, was starting to stir up.
And again, what's really interesting, at least what I think is really interesting about it, is because these characters, or one thing that's interesting, there's a lot that's interesting about it, but again, especially with a character like Homelander, who is essentially a dark, nasty, subversive, all those words I used before, and more so parody, satire, whatever, of Superman to a certain extent, although they do put in these other kind of elements, but that's really what he's supposed to be, because it's always been the what if Superman was evil. That's what Homelander essentially is. But when people talk about DC versus Marvel, a lot of times they talk about DC characters, or at least certain of them, feel more like they're gods rather than just, regular mm-hmm. people. That's the way Homelander very clearly sees himself. I mean, when we get to the next episode, he pretty much makes it very clear when, the only man, the title of the next episode is, the man, was it the man in the sky or something like that? Or the only man in the sky? Yeah. There's no guy, he's the man in the sky.
And he's kind of getting every single interview he's repeating the exact same lines and trying to distance himself from Stormfront and her Nazi background. So you get that 50 different layers of him repeating the same phrases.
What I loved about that, the fact that there was some, this is part of all that, so this will make sense in a second, and I know you'll enjoy this and you'll jump in as well. I know that for whatever reason, maybe it's just the way the direction society has gone as a whole, that the show has gotten some, I'm going to say minor, flack about it's more political now. Why is it so political now? It's like, well, first of all, I don't know what show you've been watching, people. It was like that from minute one. What did you not pick up on that before? But now people are seeing, every little thing. It was okay for me to make fun of AOC, but oh no. Anyway. Where was the point to that? There was a point. Give me a second. Oh, right. What I enjoyed about that is if you've watched things like, Last Week with John Oliver or The Daily Show in their heyday, I haven't really watched in recent years, they would find that thing where certain politicians repeat the same exact mm-hmm. talking points almost word for word, no matter where they appear on the various Sunday talk shows during the day or whatever other appearances on CNN or Fox or whatever. And you could kind of comprise them into a video like that. That's what they're doing with this character. He's been giving the specific same talking point that he's just repeating over and over. We see him showing up on a show which is kind of like a takeoff on Tucker Carlson kind of a thing, and he starts to go through it a little bit there as well. I really thought that was a nice little bit that they came up with at the beginning there.
And that, he has a pretty large, long smile anyway. Just naturally, he has a long smile, but man, he must have been doing like some cheek muscle workouts in between second and third, because he is pulling that smile further and further. And for every single scene in the first episode, if you go back and watch, his smile's just getting a little bit pulled back, a little bit further, a little bit further, and it just becomes more and more comical until he finally, says his piece, and then his face contorts back to its normal, its right. normal creepy shape.
Right. Especially when the season starts, you have a character who's, at least in his mind, because he, again, someone who views himself as an all-powerful, godlike character, but he's been made to feel somewhat powerless because you've got Stan Edgar exerting his power on him, like when he makes Starlight the co-captain of the team, and then you have Starlight herself, who wields a certain amount of power over him because of the whole thing with the video of what he did on the airliner back in season one. So it's like, you know, it's Homelander has kind of been put into a box that, you know, he's not accustomed to, which, and again, that's what the whole thing where you can feel the pressure building and everything from like the contortions of his face when he's smiling, like you were pointing out, to just, you know, how you see the restraint and he's having problems with it. And he's still kind of saying shit here and there, but not until later on where he finally just, you know, just comes out and says what he really wants to say for a change.
Well, he's not really a big fan of rules and, you know, being constrained. He wants to put on a show because he wants that attention and he thinks he's worthy of it. So when he's told to, you know, tone things down, to hold things back, to pull things together, his personality isn't ever going to be comfortable with that. So right. You throw in all of these things that is happening to him at once and he just becomes more dangerous.
Right. And also because these things would happen with him like in previous seasons, and usually there was like, you know, when there was like the Elizabeth Shue character there that kind of, you know, was able to hold him in check, even though he kept going off. I always refer to as Homelander always goes off script. Be literal or not, but quite often it is fairly literal because you're supposed to say this, and then he goes up and says what he thinks is the right way to go about it. He, you know, he's one of those characters who always believes he's right, you know, which,
yep.
And when you're able, and you have the, you know, when you have the power to pretty much destroy the world, you might think that yourself.
It's an easy belief to have.
So we start to mix in other subplots that are going on in the episode, and we do get, you know, we do get a few more scenes with Stan Edgar, and of course it's Giancarlo Esposito, so we can kind of start ranking all the Giancarlo Esposito villainous roles he has in all the shows again, because, you know, we got The Boys, we got the Better Call Saul / Breaking Bad days. I'm sure when The Mandalorian comes back, he'll be popping up back in that again, I'm sure. That he's just your go-to bag. That's why when people are saying, hey, maybe he can be Magneto in the MCU, it's like my issue isn't about, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole, well, Magneto's supposed to be this ethnic, this or that, whatever. No, I don't care about that. My issue was, are we really going to use Esposito to be the villain in, like, everything? In fact, I would like, if he was to show up in, say, the MCU for whatever reason, let him play a good guy. Just let him be a good guy again. Yeah. Wasn't he a good guy in one of those really bad TV shows from a couple years ago that was on NBC, one of those future crappy shows? Whatever. Do you know what I'm talking about? You don't know what I'm talking about.
No.
I can't remember what it was called. Brian or Dan might know what it was.
We all have high hopes that someday he'll get to have that role where he's like, you know, like a Danny Tanner role, you know, like a lovable dad, single dad. Right, you know,
quiet.
Living with a fist, some empty nest action.
Danny Tanner. Wow. Okay.
Go from cartel leader to, you know, an empty nester.
Okay. So he has a scene with, but I just have to point out, just to give a shout out to one of our favorite character actors that appears here. He does have a scene with Senator Robert Singer, who's played by the Beef. It's Jim Beaver. Everyone loves Jim Beaver here. I made sure I had to use the word Jim in there. Didn't want to get in trouble. that's where Stan Edgar's trying to sell him in Congress on the V-24, which is like the temporary superpower drug kind of thing. Throwing it in there because it's obviously that is going to be playing a part throughout this season, especially since the ads and even the posters kind of gave away, like, oh, we know someone's going to be taking it that we all know and hopefully somewhat love. I was surprised that there was still something left of... I didn't think we'd see anything on Storm Chaser. So I was kind of surprised that we saw her or what's left of her.
Yeah.
And then they had to go and do that. I mean, so let me get this straight. In the same episode where someone enters the, what would it be called? Is that like the urethra of the of a man's penis, whatever, and what happens? Then we have a person who's basically has only one functioning limb, as far as I can tell, and she gives Homelander a hand job.
Well, you know, he's an important guy. You know, he's pretty important stuff.
My notes were basically Jesus a hand job.
There's something that's just the boys, you know, about this. It is just like, here she is. And then at the end, because see, at the beginning of all of this, you know she's in the hospital bed. You know she's fighting to hold on to life at this point. She's severely, severely injured. And then at the end, we get the shift where she moves her shoulder and see that, it was just the one good hand.
It's horrible. So, like I said, the episode very heavy on setup between the V24 storyline, the Homelander's continuing, barely restrained, sometimes not so restrained menace. Huey finding out about that he's working for the head popper, and that her name's actually Nadia, and then what she does in that alleyway, which was they have a special talent with the gore on the show. It's like the wettest gore I've seen outside of maybe like the Ash versus Evil Dead kind of stuff. I mean, it's splashy, drippy everywhere. It's everywhere.
It's the Sloppy Joe effect, you know?
Oh, it's very Sloppy Joe. Sloppy Joe effect. What else? You got Butcher and his dead ex's son. And then we have this whole thing with the plot to eventually kill Homelander. And that takes off when we realize that Queen Maeve has been a source of information for Butcher. And I believe she's the one who kind of gives him the heads up to look into that old super team payback. Hence the title of the episode, and more about to try to track down what it was, this supposed super weapon that killed Soldier Boy, who apparently was a meta or a soup in a similar vein as Homelander. You get that. You get all these other little character subplots that are sprinkled throughout this episode. Like I said, it's a very dense episode of a lot of setup. I am totally fine with that, because this isn't like watching, say, a Better Call Saul, where, you know, even though you might have multiple characters, you know, you really have like two major stories that you're pursuing, and all these other characters are kind of just connected to them, but their stories are all kind of part of that one, that focused storyline. Here, they're all over the place. You know, which is fine. I haven't gotten into what's going on with Mother's Milk, and what did happen to his dad and with Soldier Boy. I don't know, and stuff like that. But they're dropping all this on us. I like that. I don't mind. It's been almost 2 years since the previous season. You know,
I love that we got to the whole thing with Nadia. I guess. That's her actual name. I'm glad that we got to her, and we kicked that into gear right away. Like, we didn't hold on to that and wait until halfway through the season was done with Huey. He got to immediately see, okay, shit, everything I'm trying to do, this isn't working, and I'm going back with Butcher.
Yeah, absolutely right. I always appreciate when a show knows, okay, we only have a certain number of episodes here, let's not waste time.
Yep.
Doing setup is not wasting time. It's actually, it's taking the time to tell us, like I said, it's where they were, where they are, and now where are they going to go? That's the way I look at setup here.
And it's a great reminder of, what Huey's character is overall, like who he is overall is the guy who just, he wants to do things the right way, and he keeps forgetting that the right way isn't getting him anywhere.
Right. It's an interest. It's one of these shows. Also, I mean, if outside of just the outside of these episodes, just in general, I remember an exercise I used to do years ago. I think it was when I was first learning and trying the craft and skill, or whatever you want to call it, when it comes to writing or screenwriting, but just story writing in general. But screenwriting, as far as TV or film. And the trick was always to try to figure out who's the main character. Because most things, it's very clear, but every once in a while you'll run into something where it's like, oh, that's a little trickier. Because, and I think I talked about this on a podcast like years and years ago, that doesn't matter if you have a movie which is, I don't care if it's, you know, Ocean's 11 or Thelma and Louise or whatever, or a TV show, whatever, there's only one main character. There's never two. You might think that. You're allowed to think that, but you're wrong. it's just the way it is. It's interesting with The Boys. It's like, who's the main character? Now, I've always believed through the first two seasons, Huey's the main character.
Sure, it's who we start with.
I'm curious. I'm gonna wait and watch the entire third season, but based on these first few episodes, this part of me is thinking, I think that might have shifted. The focus might have shifted. I wonder if Huey's not, quote unquote, the main character anymore. And, you know, it might be Butcher, actually. I'm feeling Butcher. Butcher feels more focal this season than he has the previous two. But I guess we'll see how the rest
of I would say that's a fair thing to say, because we saw it even towards the second half of the last season.
Yes.
Where we really started to see his struggles a little bit more with Beth, then, you know, having Ryan in existence, and it brought his character a little more depth, and he has something that he's got to protect now.
Right, right, and a lot of the major story beats are kind of shifting over where he's actually forcing or pushing the action rather than just being someone who's, you know, witnessing or reacting to it, which is what's going on, at least at this point, with Huey. So let's skip over to the second episode, which was the only man in the sky. And that's where one of the people that we're introduced to, because we're introduced to a lot of people in these three episodes, we're introduced to Supersonic. And we find out about this pass between this character Supersonic and Starlight. It kind of sounds like the wasn't it like the old Disney Channel thing where they had
Mickey Mouse Club or something like that.
Right, like so. Yeah, like wasn't like Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears and all that stuff like knew each other way back when. And of course, it's funny because then in the very next episode, what do we see? The young Starlight singing, but a Britney Spears song, of course. So this will be one of the few times.
Ouch.
Okay. This will be one of the few times where I will just want to throw in a few things from the comics here. Cause it's, as we did back when we talked about The Boys in season one and two, I don't like to go too far down that rabbit hole about differences and similarities because, you know, do people really care that much? But sometimes I think it's interesting because I like to see how they change something or what the reason would be or might inform us something about the character. Now with Supersonic, they have not revealed what his powers are on the series as of yet, which I find interesting. He's actually based on a character that went by a different name in the comics. His codename in the comics was Little Drummer Boy. But also from like, you know, part of a boy band kind of thing. It was part of like a young super team, kind of like the Young Americans.
Sure.
Or something like that, which, you know, you could say maybe it sounds like the Teen Titans or something like that. There was also another team called Teenage Kicks, which also sounded like an evil version of Teen Titans. I don't know. Maybe they did a whole bunch of things like that. That character in the comics just had your basic V enhanced abilities, your strength, your stamina, your speed, 3 S's, whatever. I'm going to say, I suspect that there's something else that Supersonic can do. And I'm feeling what they're going to go with. Since you've established he was a member of a boy band, and we know that he knows how to sing and dance, he's got the word Sonic in his name. So I'm betting it's probably, at some point, it's going to be some sort of takeoff on something that Black Canary, a DC character, could do with her Sonic cry.
Right.
Now, I don't know if it's going to be something generated by his voice, or a snap, or a clap, or a fart, or whatever.
This is the boys we're talking about.
It is the boys. But I keep thinking you've got the word Sonic in here. That's one of those go-to powers that comics use all the time. You know, some sort of, you know, Sonic energy. You know, someone's head's going to get blown up by a Sonic wave or something from this character. I'm guessing that's what it's going to be. So I thought that was kind of, it's kind of an interesting little subplot that they're tossing in here. I mean, he's not terribly interesting otherwise, but, and so I keep looking, I'm like, I feel like you're fodder to be killed at some point later this season.
Right. And he is going to form a little love triangle there and, you know, a little bit of opposition for Huey to deal with.
Right. So we still, now correct me if I'm wrong. No, you don't need to correct me. I know I'm not wrong on this one. So they start to play more about, there's this little mystery about Soldier Boy and Mother Milk's dad. It still has not been revealed. I'm assuming this is something we're going to see in a flashback, since they do like their flashbacks on the boys. So they're just going to keep hinting at it, and how the torture of that is what's going to, you know, what ends up turning Mother Milk to come back to the boys and whatever. But I'm waiting till when we actually get there. So, why dipping into the whole payback thing? It's when, so I guess they go start tracking them down, right? Try to find it. And the first one they track down, and who is it that goes, who is it that goes to see Crimson Countess? I forget right now. Is it,
isn't it a Frenchie and Kimiko?
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah, that sounds right to me. Okay, so it's the Crimson Countess. Now, it's very nice timing to do something with Crimson Countess. It's just weeks after everyone in the world watched Scarlet Witch in the Doctor Strange movies. Obviously, Crimson Countess is the parody or satire on the Scarlet Witch. I also wouldn't want to mention that her name is not just a play on Scarlet Witch. It's also a play on a DC villain, the Emerald Empress. You know, it's even got the alliteration in there. First thing I thought about, oh, and I believe it's yet another actor who plays both male and female from Walking Dead. Because I think, don't they have like a bunch of Walking Dead people who have shown up on the show over the last few seasons?
Oh, yeah, there's been a few. Yep, she played Andrea. She was also on The Americans.
That's right, she was on The Americans. I forgot about that. Yeah, I totally forgot she was on The Americans. Jeez, that's right. My first question about her character is, what's with all the chimp love?
Right? There's a bit.
what's going on there?
Yeah, there's a little bit. not to overshadow her entrance and her character, but there was just something so sweet that we saw throughout the episodes, not just this one with Kimiko and Kimiko and how she's, you know, she's really sitting and she's taking this in and she's, it's just like her eyes and her adoration is like that of a child, you know, she's taking in all these like normal childhood, like activities of going to a fair. And then in her mind, you know, hearing herself singing and just this longing that she has to be able to speak and be normal.
Right. When they had that moment, I guess it was the first episode when she walks in on the woman playing piano.
Yes.
Which it's a lovely little moment with her. And mm-hmm. I suspected that was going to be like one of those little fantasy dream moments, just much like Homelander destroying the crowd last season. And in a way it was lovely and heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's also and again, because it's been almost, it feels like it's been like 2 years since the last season or whatever it was a reminder to me like, oh, that's right, she's essentially mute, or so it seems, but that's by choice, you know, because I remember she uses a sign language and all that stuff, but I kept thinking, wait a minute, but I thought she could speak, but she can speak, she just doesn't. Isn't that correct?
Well, and she tries to deny her powers as much as she possibly can.
Right.
And we get that moment with her and Ryan too, you know, where she says that she doesn't like having them.
Right. I hope I'm right about that. I don't I keep thinking I'm making mistakes about the boys in this podcast. I apologize.
You know, it's been like 6.5 years since, since last season, I'm pretty sure. I mean, even 2 years in actual time, like, let's face it, it's basically been 6.5 years.
Yeah, you're right. I'm just trying to remember now. Yeah, well, COVID just screwed up everything. I'm just trying to, because I'm saying that she chooses not to speak or whatever. It's more about her being damaged. But now I'm thinking, wait, I might be wrong about that. I'm not sure. I apologize. I'm going to move on. Or I'll wait until Jamie says a whole lot, and I'll look it up online, and I'll ignore you, and I'll just look it up online and check. Oh yeah, okay, she can't talk or something like that. Oh man, all right. So we're just gonna skip around this episode a little bit. You know, you get your moments, like, you know, everything from like Stan Edgar kind of putting his thumb on Homelander yet again. The A-Train. Oh man. A-Train's a very interesting character.
Because he is. He really is.
Because you want to give him credit. It's kind of like, in a weird way, it's kind of like what they did with the Deep. Only the Deep, they play a bit more for laughs and way more tragic comic moments with the Deep over the last 3 seasons. With the A-Train, much like the Deep, we're set up to not like him from the get-go. Because, you know, he's the one who starts the whole thing when he literally runs through Huey's girlfriend at the very beginning of season one. Mm-hmm. And they pretty much establish he's kind of an asshole. You know, pretty big one. But ever from the point where he starts to become, you know, kind of isolated from the team, and the way he's being treated, and he's got his medical issues as well, and for whatever reason, he's got Homelander's meanest thing he might do outside of any physical harm is how he keeps pointing out that he's put on weight because he's not able to run and burn off stuff. So to our eyes, like, maybe he might be like 5 pounds heavier, but Homelander just keeps calling him like a fatty. You know, it's really
bad. He's kind of a fat shaming asshole.
Oh yeah,
not giving him an ounce of leeway.
Yeah, I realized then. Now I know I can't be friends with Homelander. It really depressed me. But when he's doing the pitch to have himself rebranded and all the different things, and when I think it's Ashley which reacts, it's like, wait, a video game about the slave trade or slave? Yeah, my God. And I went, no. And then when he changes his outfit to have the more culture conscious. it's so good because it's so bad. But the point I got away from the point that I was trying to make. So my bad for my own rambling there. What I like about what they do with the show, like I said, they did it with the Deep, and they're doing it with this character as well. They take a character that you initially really just don't like, and they've done something pretty horrible. Either it's him not just accidentally murdering someone, but not giving a shit that he did that, or the Deep essentially raping Starlight.
Yeah.
And then everything happens after. It's like, okay, we've shown you how horrible they are, but now we're going to keep doing stuff where you're going to find yourself feeling bad for them. You're going to think, I actually have some sympathy for them. That shouldn't be right. I mean, I feel like they've done that with the Deep to a great extent. Because he's just such
he got wrapped up in a cult, and, you know.
The cult stuff was great.
He keeps losing his sea life friends and
we're an episode away from that.
I mean, it was a whale last season. I mean, like, he just can't catch a break.
Oh, there was the lobster in the supermarket that time.
Yes. That's a hard superpower to have in today's climate, you know? It really is. Okay. If you have sympathy for these animals and they're your friends, that's a tough one.
Avoid sushi bars. I don't know what to tell you, man. But I find that very interesting that they've done that with each of these really essentially horrible people. And I kind of admire that they've done that. I mean, and I like that there's a teensy tiny bit of that with Homelander, but certainly not enough for us to actually feel bad for him now. There was a moment in a previous season where you kind of felt, oh, okay, I can see, you know, it's kind of a tragic, sad beginning to his origin there. But no, you're horrible. I can't get past it. No, because you just have a more classic supervillain origin, whatever. Which always, yeah. Villains are always based in some sort of form of tragedy that forms them. Speaking of being formed, actually, not speaking at all. So later, we see Huey discovers. A little confused by this. So Stan Edgar didn't adopt Nadia, but they let him take her because I guess he's just this rich, powerful, whatever. So, he didn't adopt her. I guess, is that fair to say?
Right. That's my take. Yes.
Right. So that's how that's how Huey basically draws the more specific, definite link between her and San Edgar and Vought and whatever. So, like the guys who went on, like Frenchie and Kamiko went on the mission to Crimson Countess, we have Butcher going to see Gunpowder. Gunpowder. Now, Gunpowder was set up here and in the comics to be Soldier Boy's sidekick. And I think it's clear Soldier Boy, before he's even been on screen, I think everybody knows Soldier Boy is a takeoff on Captain America. I think that goes without, as obvious as can be. So when you have someone supposed to be Soldier Boy's sidekick, that means, oh, he's like Bucky. As Bucky was Captain America's sidekick, at least in the 1940s, whatever. Not so much later on. However, when you see how they established the Gunpowder character, he seems to be a bit more reminiscent of a Marvel character like the Punisher. The way, you know, whatever. However, here's a weird thing just for comic geeks out there. Turns out Judge Dredd was supposedly the original inspiration for the Gunpowder character, which is really bizarre the more I think about it. I also feel that he's very reminiscent of the Watchmen character, the comedian. I think there's a lot there. So it's basically, you take, I think there was a certain period in comic book history where everyone was coming up with this one character who was just really into guns and killing or whatever and very nihilistic, whether it be a Punisher. Judge Dredd was sort of like that, although it's a little different, so that's why I find it to be a very strange comparison. Or the comedian, like I just mentioned, is kind of a takeoff on all that kind of stuff. It's an interesting character that they've set up here, although we don't get to really spend that much time with him. I did kind of enjoy it as I was trying to figure it all out. It's like going, oh, what does he do? I was like, oh, he's a gun guy. Oh, okay, I know who this guy's supposed to be. Whatever.
Yeah, and he was the junior shoot. He was in charge of the junior shooting program that was developed by Vought Rifle Association.
Right, which makes sense. It would be the junior thing because I think. Oh, when I earlier I mentioned that comic book wise that the Supersonic or Little Drummer Boy from the comics was in a teen team, the Young Americans. Gunpowder was in the more decidedly evil one called Teenage Kicks. So that's where that's where that character came from. Which
Kicks.
Let's go to the suicide scene.
Oh man! In case you were wondering, if you ever want to just question if there's any chance of a redemption arc for that character.
Yeah, that's
nah. The answer's nah.
So, my favorite line, and again, I'm allowed to say this because of what runs in my bloodline, whatever. But when Homelander's up on that rooftop with that girl who was on the ledge, about to commit suicide. Apparently this, I love how they establish, I think this is like a yearly thing where they have Homelander save someone just before they kill themselves. So I wonder, for a second they're like, wait, is this just a stunt or is it real? No, it seems like she really does want to kill herself. And he starts going on about Jesus and stuff. But he throws in the line, you probably don't know this because, Jew. Because they establish that she's Jewish. And I went, Oh man.
Yeah.
It's like, well, maybe you and Stormfront wouldn't have been such a bad pairing after all, but you know. And then part of me said, nah, I probably would have said the same line because I can say that kind of stuff. But yeah, that's and oh, by the way, it's one of those, the moment he's there, I was like, oh, well, she's definitely going to be falling to her
death. Well, she's dead.
there is no doubt about it.
Yeah, no hope for her.
But it's just...
Listen, you can't rain on his parade or die on his birthday.
Right.
If you do those things, you're asking for it, I guess.
I guess, and I think it's when he's up there, that's when he, right, it's what you just said, because isn't it that he finds out that Stormfront's dead?
Yep, that's when they just show it on the news.
Right. So, speaking of things that I can relate to, I kind of really appreciate that, and I remember this was kind of touched on before, it's been a while, but I seem to have a vague memory of it, that Mother's Milk has just a little bit of an OCD thing.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. And again, it's the way he exhibits it kind of reminds me of me.
Yep.
Now, I kind of call it fake OCD because, you know, it doesn't actually interfere with my living, but you still have these maddening little neatening quirks the way he does. And then you realize his might be just a twinge more serious when there's that moment when he's dropping off his daughter at his ex-wife's house.
Mm-hmm.
And you notice the way he kind of taps on the doorbell before he rings it. When I saw that, I was like, "Oh, that's interesting."
Yeah, he has tapping rituals. They've shown him a few other times, and like I said, I know somebody who, you know, is at that level with it. And they've done an excellent job at just like sliding these things without completely pointing them out. But there's rarely a scene with him where you can't see some indication of it.
Right. And again, just to personalize it, I've, over the last several months, been at least a year, I've oddly developed something similar where, because I live in a brownstone, and you have to, outside, you walk up a flight of stairs before you open the door, right? And there's a railing on either side of the stairs, you know. I don't know how it started. I have to tap the front of the railing on the left side when I start to walk up the stairs and the midpoint of the railing on the right side when I'm halfway up the stairs. I've actually started to walk up the stairs, realize I forgot to do it, and will walk back down to make the tap. It doesn't matter if I'm carrying laundry or packages or whatever. I will... It doesn't have to be. It's got to happen. And I make my rules like it doesn't have to be by hand. It could be with whatever I'm holding. It could be my umbrella. It could be whatever. But the things have to be tapped. Yeah, I might have maybe problems. All right, so
a little bit of anxiety. A little bit of anxiety there, Scott. Tough town. Tough town.
Yeah, you know, it's tough town. I don't know. It's anyway. So. Later on, Huey tells Butcher about Newman, and Butcher clearly takes the V-24, which leads to his later confrontation with Gunpowder. I should mention that. Well, if everyone's watched it, they know that there was already some gunplay earlier on. And they were also doing the thing with Gunpowder where he took a shot, but he clearly kind of knew all the different angles and how it would end up, you know, killing, or in this case, just grazing Butcher.
Yep.
Which feels like, okay, that goes from every... There's so many characters who are like that, you know.
Sure.
You know, dead, you know, DC, you've got Deadshot, you know. Is it Deadshot? God, oh my God, right. Deadshot from, you know, who's in the Suicide Squad. We'll get to that shortly. Or in Marvel, you know, the Daredevil villain, Bullseye was like that. And so, anyway. But we know it's going to be bye-bye Gunpowder, and I kept wondering who's going to clean that up.
Yeah, he doesn't have a guy, you know? It's not like Nadia who can just call someone in to clean it.
Well, I was wondering because if he doesn't, if that's not cleaned up, then this guy is found, and it's obviously he was killed by someone with abilities as well. that's going to get in the press.
Well, and I mean, I don't know what their setup is for security there, but I mean, a lot of these parking ramps, don't they have like some security cameras?
Cameras, yeah. So I'm wondering. Now we'll see. This could still come up. Who knows? But it's one of those things, like, if it's never mentioned again, I am going to be like, all right, we just decided, okay, fine. Whatever. So let's get to the ending. It's Homelander at his birthday celebration. And it's what we were leading up to talking to about before. It's Homelander going off script. And basically speaking his mind. I mean, the only thing he doesn't do is just wipe out the audience with his eye lasers. Because, you know, I love how they want to make sure they don't ever say heat vision. So they keep saying that in the most awkward way possible. Like, I'll laser you. It's like, it's heat vision, man.
Whatever. He needs some special glasses, man. I'm just saying.
Yeah, like that. But, he basically speaks his mind. And he really doesn't hold back.
No. Nope. He doesn't. And I mean, I don't know how you felt about it, but with it, one, we know who the character is and we know that he's not a good guy.
Right.
Two, with the exception of a few of the choice phrases or uses, you know, words that he uses, you know, it's like, I mean, like, I don't want to say you can't blame him. I don't want to give him that much. But also, like, I guess even Supes have a breaking point, right? Where they right. Where they're finally like, I have to just tell it as it is.
Right. And it's what's funny about it. In my mind is, and we find this out in the next episode. So I'm skipping to detail two from that episode is, although we do, as we're watching it and we're also seeing audience reactions, like Todd, which is, Mother Milk's ex's new, beau there. He seems really into it.
Oh yeah. No,
he's totally into it. And which I think is done for a very specific reason. But I was thinking about it as I'm watching. It's like he's saying all these things which are kind of horrible but true. Mm-hmm. And he's being very blunt about things, whatever. And he's saying things to people that, you know, if they really stop to think about it, it's not really great for them per se. But the fact that he's, you know, ripped off any veneer of anything, and he sounds like he's just, you know, talking to them and being very plain spoken, very direct, whatever, not, you know, no bullshit with it, whatever. You start putting together the things in your brain, like, oh, the people who are complaining about them being too political, you start to think, I wonder if a little bit of that's here. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm talking about. Because especially when we get to the next episode and we talk and there's talk about the audience reactions and shot up, and especially when they focus on the specific audience types or segments that it really appealed to, yes. I'm like going,
Yep, absolutely.
They slipped that in there. I see what you're doing, boys.
We see it. You know, and his line that he would always say, you know, at the end of these interviews is that he would tell the audience members like that he's not a hero, they're the real hero, and he took it back.
Right.
He took it back. Right. He's owning it. Like they're not the hero. He's the real hero.
Absolutely. It's the way I talk about myself on the podcast. You should have heard me last week. Oh, maybe you shouldn't.
Okay. It's a good thing my headphones broke. It's a good thing my headphones broke. You know.
I accused one of the people. Anyway. So the third episode was Barbary Coast. And like I mentioned, I did enjoy the fact that she was singing that Britney Spears song in the beginning, because it brought together that whole Disney Channel like thing.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely got the tie-in where they were heading. And then watching, you know, watching mom do the quintessential dance mom slash pageant mom doing all the moves, you know, in the shadows. Watching her, making sure she's nailing those moves.
Right. And also, it was a reminder that her mom's a piece of shit.
You bet.
How major an impact that had on her life, which we see at the end of the episode.
Yep.
The whole thing about how dealing with pain, and we see that even though this girl is clearly in pain, that she clenches her fist behind her to try to hold it in and restrain herself. And we bookend the episode with that happening at the end after what goes on stage with Homelander later on. Speaking of things going on with Homelander, and I had mentioned the thing about the popularity when Ashley comes in about his Q rating, which is like sky high, especially when he's team. And even though they didn't, it was weird. We didn't see it, but it sort of, I sort of felt like I did. Oh, and my favorite part is Ashley's reaction and making it clear, like, oh, this isn't from you.
Yeah, right? Yep. This isn't. Yep. This has nothing to do with you.
Meanwhile, you know, she's banging, like, you know, the little dopey-looking director in the beginning of the movie for, I don't even know what that was about, just to get some, I guess. So, yeah, it's like what you were saying, and what we know about Homelander is it's about, at this point in the episode at least, and up until this point, it's about the love and adoration or hero worship that he thrives on and that he lives, whatever. I love the turn that takes later on, which I was like, you know, like I was like, oh, you just made yourself a really good villain, motherfucker. Get there in a second. I want to get to Mother's Milk showing up at the boys' place. Oh, by the way, Flatiron Building. Those of us, the listeners in New York, we're all familiar with the Flatiron Building. We love it. For a good chunk of my life, I worked at an office that was basically, you know, the Flatiron Building was like across the street, so every time we walked out, it's right there. So I've, you know, grown up, you know, the Flatiron Building practically. And it seems that it's been used, there's been a lot of movies and TV shows over the years, like, oh, and their office is in the, I think The Usual Suspects, like, hey, they're in the Flatiron Building, like, no, you're not. So I love that they're located there. It's to me, it's kind of ridiculous, but I like it. But my favorite thing was, so Mother's Milk shows up and he sees, and he and Frenchie reunite, and the thing with the plate, when I was like, you know, again, you know, to be tight, you know, you use a plate. When Frenchie says, but I don't use a plate when I eat your mother's sweet and savory vagine, and they crack. I was like, okay, that might. I don't know if there's going to be a line in this episode which is going to top that one for me. Just your mother's sweet and savory vagine. I thought he had like a Borat waste of a vagine. And it's in this scene, if I'm not, shortly later in this scene, is when you realize just how serious and committed Huey is to undoing what he feels he's been responsible for over the past year by working under Newman. Newman. Someone's got to do this. Someone, come on, Huey, do it. sorry. When the whole thing is like to come up with an adequate excuse of why he won't be around the office and do all these things, and part of me kept thinking, you can't come up with any other idea. You could, and then I guess not. Break your arm.
Oof.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah. First of all, ow, that seems, I don't know, unnecessary. Also, I don't know very many jobs where it's like, okay, you broke your arm and it's casted, come back to work. Like, no, no one's all like, it's cool. It's cool that you don't show up over a broken arm. They get you like you know, in most jobs, maybe a half day.
Oh,
you broke your arm. Okay. You know, okay. Maybe you need to sleep off the pain meds, you know, but
I might give you more than half a day.
I don't know. Not in the working world, not in today's working world. You know, I don't know though. It depends. He could probably buy himself some more time with sandwiches.
He's doing missions. He
could just leave some sandwiches. She would never know he was gone.
All right, you and fucking sandwiches.
You don't steal somebody's sandwich. I'm just saying.
All right, Tribbiani, calm down. Anyway. So one of the things that's happening in this episode is we establish that there's a reality competition show, because there has to be.
Yes, indeed.
Is it called American Made? Or something like that. Or American Hero.
American Hero,
Hero, not American Made. I apologize. And we realize, oh, it's the whole point of it is like, oh, they're going to pick the next two new members of the seven. And you start doing the math in your mind. You start realizing, okay, wait a minute. How many are actually left here? Because we killed that one. That one wasn't in the team anymore. And that one. And it's like, wait, Noir is still, I think, recovering from peanut poisoning and all that stuff. And like, you're just trying to realize, wait, do they need to? It's like, oh, I think they do. I'm very confused. So we also, was anyone wondering what happened to Frenchie's gal pal, Sherry?
I'm going to be honest. I forgot the character existed.
Yeah.
I did. And I mean, until I saw it, it took me a minute to kind of dig back and go, okay, that's who this is.
Right. I mean, once she popped up, I was like, oh yeah. I wondered what happened to her. I thought they just wrote her out, which is what they did. Now she's back again, whatever. And it was more to remind us of the kind of activity that Frenchie was involved in before he upped with the boys here. So I didn't mind that. I think I also recognized the park where they were supposed to be, even though I don't think it was actually filmed there. So at Grace's retreat, Butcher and his clown show up there. And that's where we get the beginning of a flashback story. That I keep calling it. Is Grace at some point called the Colonel? Because in my notes I call her the Colonel.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't caught that.
Yeah, if she's not referred to that way, and I'm just like tripping when I'm writing my little jotting my notes down. I don't know, but because I see my notes, Colonel tells flashback story. It's like, Colonel? Oh, must be Grace. Is Grace a colonel? I don't know. All right. She's telling a flashback story of a mission that involved payback in Nicaragua, which I thought was kind of interesting in of itself, because on one hand, you're establishing payback is a team that's kind of based on the Avengers, but this entire mission and everything about it is the kind of mission that that DC would have their characters, the Suicide Squad, go on. It's a very Suicide Squad-like mission. The whole thing is very Suicide Squad-ish. So basically, they got to knock two companies for the price of one. and that's when we find out, they kind of spin off the Iran-Contra affair here a little bit. And so folks who know their history, with that sort of thing, I'm not here to explain it to you. If you don't, you know, go Google it. But the big reveal here is that, you know, they're getting drugs from Nicaragua that they would smuggle into the U.S. and they would sell them to pay for weapons. And they also additionally reveal that the drugs that were sold targeted minority neighborhoods, and the idea of both destabilizing and demoralizing them and also staying out of white neighborhoods. This is kind of one of those may or may not be absolutely true kind of things that has been talked about for decades now, about how the government, there's always been conspiracy theories that these things were done in certain neighborhoods. And for every bit that you can find that's actually told there, that's absolutely true. And in some regards, some of it is a bit more speculative as well. It is kind of hard to deny in some instances, I think.
Yeah, just a bit.
So here, in the first part of the flashback story, not only do we meet some of the members of Payback, some of which we've met already, we also meet a young Stan Edgar as well. I thought that was very interesting to have a husband. And were you trying to watch for the guy's performance to see if he was doing anything that was Giancarlo-like in his speech?
Oh, absolutely.
I was catching.
I don't remember what I was doing, but I was setting something down when he first started speaking. So before I even saw, like where they were at, I was just listening to, probably for about 2 minutes, I was listening to what was happening. And then like, as soon as he started speaking, I knew exactly who he was, because he really, oh man, he figured out that dictation and the soft swoop, that soft swoop that he always puts like at the very end of everything he says. And yeah, that was great. That was really great acting.
And also there's a very interesting moment between the young Stan Edgar and a younger version of Noir. Noir with his face revealed and his, I think we all knew, but his race revealed.
For a minute.
And he's actually, and he's talking about the fact that he doesn't want to have to wear a mask anymore. And they have that little conversation about, shall we say how race is a factor and how he would appeal or not appeal to certain audience segments. So they were talking about that even back then. This also goes very well with that conversation about where they're going to be targeting the drugs. And of course, we also kind of see, like, pretty much it's like, yeah, Soulja Boy, you're a total piece of shit as well.
There it is.
And it's not in my notes, but let me just mention it now because I just mentioned that we do kind of show us the other members of Payback. There's a few others here that are also mainly parodies or parallels to Marvel characters, although there's some odd business going on here that isn't really explained. For example, in the comics, there was a character named Mind Droid. Mind Droid. It's take off on the Vision. Here, they have a character named Mind Storm. It's still got to be the same character. I just don't know why they changed the name, but whatever. Swatto, who is a moron who kind of, insect wings pop up and he can fly around, whatever. He's pretty much a takeoff, people say he's mainly a takeoff on Ant-Man. I would say he's a takeoff on Ant-Man and the Wasp, kind of combined into one character. Because, the flying ability, whatever.
One insect. One right. insect.
The one I'm not sure about, and if I had an extra day or if I hadn't been sleeping earlier, maybe I would have gotten some research done on it. They mentioned these twins there. I don't know who they're, I'm not sure who they're supposed to be. And if anyone says the Wonder Twins, I'm like, shut up. but I'm not, although, who knows? They're pretty much as useless as they would be. So I don't know. Because if they're based on anyone specifically, I'm not positive. I started running through my mind, like in the original Avengers, Wanda and Quicksilver are brother and sister, but we already got the Crimson Countess, so they can't be that. I was like, wait, are there any other siblings I'm not aware? I wasn't sure. Again, we may never see them again, so who cares? But I just wanted to make sure I got that out there. Like, okay, these are all the different little Avenger characters that we established.
Is it?
Scene.
Maybe the Kane sisters?
I have no idea.
Okay.
No idea. Anyway, Butcher does stop her in mid-story because apparently he's still feeling the after effects of that drug. And
a little hungover bait.
Yeah. But, someone like him, he probably could have gotten away with that being his excuse. He certainly was trying to make it that way. But I think people are catching on there. There's a bit more going on here, especially the kid Ryan really seemed to be aware that there was more to it than that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, he was, what did he say, something about his heart rate and his blood smelled different.
Right. It's
like, ooh, some...
Now,
terrifying powers this child has.
Now, it's interesting that they start a flashback story, and then Butcher himself literally interrupts it because he's not feeling well. He'll be right back. And then we kind of bounce to all these other things before we get back to that story. which I'm fine with. I just thought that was kind of cool that they did that. Just because, you know, first of all, you've got all the stuff going on with Starlight and Homelander, which during all this, you know, everything from where is it? Oh yeah. Wait, first of all, you have Starlight trying to convince Supersonic that, oh yeah, they're going to pick you. Please don't take the membership. And she's basically warning him that, you know, his life and family's life could be in danger because, you know, Homelander's fucking psycho. But then later on, and this is this one of my favorite? It is my favorite. It's one of my favorite scenes in the entire thing. When Homelander is having that conversation with her after he reveals that he wants to bring the Deep back to the team.
Yes.
And I believe the Deep even comes in with his girlfriend. I guess it's a... Did he marry her or is that just his girlfriend?
Yeah, it's his wife.
It is his wife.
Yeah, because when he was talking about escaping the cult, when he was talking about escaping the cult and then that movie that they made, the Not Without My Dolphin.
Oh, my God.
Real life story of him and his wife escaping the cult.
Okay, thank you. I was pretty sure that they were married. I was going, he must be married. It's like Aquaman and Mira, but then I thought of Amber Heard and I didn't want to think about it anymore. So he ends up having that conversation with Starlight. And this is what we were talking about before. And this is when I was like, okay, in case we had been brain dead for the first 2.5 episodes or the first 2.5 seasons or whatever it was, if he didn't realize he was the villain before, oh my God, he's the villain now. Because yep. Starlight again tries to use the video as, you know, it's like, okay, you know, don't you, you've obviously forgotten I have this video, I'll just release it, whatever. And I believe he even says he's okay. He's pretty much decided he's okie doke with being fit with that happening. Because he details, to a great extent, what he will do. How he will take out the Pentagon and the White House. He basically goes through everywhere and everything that he's going to destroy.
Which makes his name just a little bit more ironic.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And it's clear, like, yeah, he is the villain. And they have no leverage. I believe he even uses the phrase leverage. Because once you don't have your leverage, you know, what are you going to do now? So, after, of course, the Deep wasn't present for that part of the conversation, he went to go have some celebratory sex with his wife, and that's where we have him gazing up at the little octopods, you know, on the glass there. And now, I knew there was something with an octopus in this episode. I knew that. I remember even thinking, oh, are they going to have some fun and riff on Squid Game in this episode or something? I'm just curious.
Right.
And yeah, I guess they do play a game with Squid, but not what I was thinking. Yeah, I'm just going to, even though it comes later, if I bring it up now, I'm going to talk about it now. Let's just fast forward to when they have that. The celebratory sex later is the quote unquote celebratory dinner with Homelander, Ashley, Timothy. It's, well, first of all, it's all the different seafood that's brought out.
Oh my God, right? And just the vicious, like, cracking apart of the lobster.
And the slurping of the clam.
Oh, it was really disgusting. But it was very reminiscent to me of, if you got the chance to watch the Netflix series of The Dark Crystal, it was like watching a bunch of Skeksis, you know, around their meal. It just was disgusting.
Yeah, it's bad. And yes, Timothy. I mean, that was pretty horrible. Horrible.
It was incredibly horrible, just the idea of it itself. But then you have this little octopus and they've CGI'd these adorable little eyes and he's just doing everything he can to stop himself from going down his throat hole. It's so horrible.
Not funny. Not
poor Timothy. R.I.P. R.I.P. Timothy.
And there's no real reason for Homelander to do this other than the fact he's not a good guy.
Yep. Yeah, he's just having fun, because you know, toying with his prey, really. Control.
He already domineers over the deep to begin with. So
yes.
But he's just enjoying this. And he's comparing himself to Martin Luther King during the whole conversation at the table, which is amazing. It's amazing.
Oh my God.
Free at last.
And the fact that this is all happening to who it's happened, like somebody who like literally just made a Lifetime movie about escaping a cult, still stuck, forever stuck in that mindset of doing whatever the leader says.
Right. Except it's not Billy Zane this time.
Nope. It's not Billy Zane. He's a cool dude.
So speaking of other members, we had a little bit more of A-Train in this episode. A-Train hanging out with his brother. And
I loved that scene.
I really liked the scene. Really also further establishing that A-Train can't really run anymore. So he's, unless I'm missing something, sort of kind of useless. I mean, even the Deep has more going on than A-Train would at this point. Unless he also has other abilities I'm not aware of. Like maybe he has strength as well. I don't know. But if I think he was just a Flash guy and if he can't run, then what's the point of him?
Then that's it. And it's a tough one, because if he doesn't have those powers, you know, and we see what being a part of the Seven has done to him. Mm-hmm. Working with Vought has done with him, and more than anything, how he's treated by Homelander. And here he is sitting on the porch with his brother, who just like is telling him, like, your superpowers don't mean anything.
Right.
You know, I just want my brother. I want to work with my brother, because that sounds like a fantastic thing. To see that he does have love and support on the other side of this crazy world that he's a part of. But once you're a part of that, how do you be okay letting it go?
Oh, yeah, it's like a sugar rush. It's a power rush. And even if he's not what he was before, it's the trappings of fame and fortune, and you know, and then it's what leads to the downfall of so many. And that was what they were doing with his character in the previous two seasons. Because what's the most common thing that brings down, you know, a lot of young, brash celebrities, especially, you know, either being musicians or the occasional actors or comedians, or whatever, it's drug issues. What was he doing? He was basically hooked on a drug, you know. I love the, I guess they would be his nieces, I'm guessing. Basically the way they react to his outfit. It's perfect. It's like that's what corny means. That's what the new corny means. We also get a story. It's always like when we get little stories about other psycho soups that are out there. We find out that there's another soup out there named Blue Hawk.
Oh yes.
Oh, by the way, Blue Hawk is the one who really sounds like a Punisher-like character to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's apparently a quote-unquote soup or superhero who apparently curb-stomped and killed an innocent black man in the neighborhood, whatever. So they give them credit. They're taking dips here and doing references to a lot of, you know, current issue things, because this is a naming him Blue Hawk and everything else. And when we see the little bits of footage of him on TV, whatever, you know, this is their way of referencing what's been going on, what's always been going on, but especially in the last few years, as far as the police and the perceived treatment of black men specifically, but black women as well, obviously. And when A-Train refers to himself as like, he's Michael Jordan, not Malcolm X. And I just like, oh, so this is the episode where everyone compares themselves to these major iconic figures, and right, and they're all clearly deluded.
But I also like the struggle that, you know, that we're getting to see, the struggle that he has to represent something that he does not have the sense of responsibility required to be representation.
Right.
And I think it ties back into when the very first time we see him, and you know, he smashes right through, you know, Huey's girlfriend, that he doesn't have a good sense of responsibility.
Right.
And that is his, that's his kryptonite. That's his flaw. It's responsibility.
Interesting. You saying that this black man's not showing responsibility. What's wrong with you, Jamie? No, I'm just kidding. trying to get you canceled.
It's the 5 pounds he gained.
I wish I only had 5 pounds. So, what else? Something else happens before we get back to the flashback story. Oh yeah, Frenchie gets picked up by apparently little Nina's men, but we'll get to her later. Let's get back to the flashback story. Flashback story is where it all goes to shit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, it's just, I think there was an episode of Barry recently where the title was, I think it was like Crazy Time Shit Show or something. That's basically what happens.
Yeah, that sums this up.
Yeah, the so-called superheroes, they seem to be killing anybody regardless what side they're on. And they're getting picked off themselves, you know. But a lot of them either end up wounded or dead. Like, I think Swaddle is blown out of the sky and stuff. And that's where we also see that Noir has most of his face pretty much kind of blown off, which then kind of sets what we're going to see with his character from this point on. Now we know why he always has the mask on, why he never
why
says
it stays
anything,
on.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. And it adds a tragic element to a character that we hadn't seen before. They also make a reference to this peanut allergy during an earlier scene between him and Edgar. I noticed. And I kept thinking, didn't really need to pop that in there, but okay.
Just a reminder,
and it's in the aftermath when because we're rooting for Grace in the scene because she's the one who's like knows that you know these are fuck ups, they're going to screw everything up. She cares about the men that are working for her. She's
right.
Traumatized by the fact that they do get killed. She's running back and forth. She's getting blown from one side to the other, but she's you know survives it and everything. And later on, when she sees Crimson Countess comes popping out, and she's the one who says that they quote unquote they killed Soldier Boy, and apparently correct me if I'm wrong, it's the Russians that are leaving with his body supposedly. Mm-hmm. Now it has to be pointed out, if someone's just told you that, that doesn't mean it's true. We didn't see it, so if there was any question, Soldier Boy might still be alive. To me, that meant, yeah, I think Soldier Boy.
Oh, absolutely.
Obviously. Just because she says something don't make it true. Either she's part of a lie or she's just mistaken. I guess we'll find out in a subsequent episode. I'm very intrigued about the whole, it's the Russians that took him, because I'm kind of curious where they're going to go with that. If it is indeed the Russians that took him. So that's pretty much how they sum that up. When we come back, there is this, Huey and I think some others, Mother Milk leave the room, and Grace and Butcher have a little tense little conversation between them, because he's kind of blaming her for everything that led up straight through to his ex-wife being killed. Mother Milk isn't too happy with them either, because you know he's blaming Soldier Boy for the death, and we still are waiting for that story, whatever. Can I point a little detail out? I just remembered. I think during all this, Huey, he's wearing a t-shirt. He's wearing a t-shirt, The Last Waltz. It's a very interesting choice of a shirt. Because, you know, we've seen a lot of these superhero shows where you have characters wearing, like, rock and roll or whatever kind of or music t-shirts. You know, mm-hmm. Certainly Robot Man does it in every episode, Doom Patrol, whatever. He's wearing a shirt based on the documentary about the band from the 70s. A movie that was directed by one Martin Scorsese. Who's the most famous director who said all this crap about superhero movies and stuff that became such a big deal in the press over the last few years? That would be Martin Scorsese. That is not, so that, I don't feel that is a coincidence that they did.
No.
At all.
I would be hard pressed to believe that it was.
I just love the idea that they went
That's hilarious.
A deep cut and made it, because Huey's kind of a music guy, so they went with okay, yep. We can actually reference Martin Scorsese here.
That's fantastic.
So I got a big kick out of that. After that tense conversation with Grace, Butcher then storms off. But not before he has that little sad scene with Ryan where he basically blows him off and Ryan rips off that chain he had given him. And
leave it to Butcher. He can't be like, there's a lot of stuff going on and I don't want to put you in danger. So it's going to be a minute before I see you again. Nope. He pulled the Butcher.
Yeah, pretty much. So it becomes one of those things where, you have those scenes sometimes where you have a character doing something when they have to be kind of like rough on somebody because it's for the greater good.
Yeah, like they gotta throw the stick at the dog and say, "Get out!"
Yeah. Right.
That's exactly it.
I don't know if that's what this scene was. I'm not feeling that's what this scene was to me. He might, either he believes it to be that way or not, I don't know. But I didn't see it that way. At least, I think it didn't work that way.
I think that it can't flow quite as easy as that, because we did get to see that Ryan knows something is wrong with him.
Right.
He knows something's wrong. Whether the words hurt him or not, he knows something's wrong with him. Also, I mean, like, the kid is clearly, like, got some crazy powers. Maybe don't, like, I don't know, maybe don't give him a bunch of even more emotional baggage and hurt and pain to deal with, because, like, have you read a comic book, dude?
He's already Homelander Jr. to begin with.
Yeah, we gotta handle this a little bit. We gotta handle this a little bit better.
Right. So, we'll step away from this, go back to Frenchie. Like I said, Frenchie was taken by Little Nina's men. Little Nina being the Russian drug lord, gangster, whatever, that he'd worked with or for before he and Sherry. Once again, want to point out the difference between this character and the character from the comics, who was kind of a major character for a little bit of time there. Her name is Little Nina. In the comics, she is literally little. She's tiny. She's short. She's like, just a few feet tall, whatever. Got a weird bowl cut, whatever. Really, really, really into vibrators. Really, really, really into vibrators.
A connoisseur, if you will.
Yes. I don't know. I don't feel they're establishing that with this character. So I'm gonna hope it's okay for me to say this. I don't accidentally, unintentionally spoil something. What happens? The character meets her end. via a tinkered with vibrator, in fact, if I'm not mistaken.
Battle learner.
I think it blows up real good. They do establish that there was some bit of a kink between these two, between strap-ons and the fact that they had a safe word. It's not just that they had a safe word. The safe word was Vincent Cassell. Vincent Cassell's the actor. If you don't know who he is, go look him up. You've seen him in a few movies over the years. French actor. He's a pretty good actor, actually. But I could see him being the safe word. It made me laugh. But yeah, she's basically, she just wants to know where Shuri is and get information on that. And she does let him go because she just feels he'll be back and she'll eventually get the information that she wants. But later at at their Flatiron Lair, when we see Frenchie is really loading up on the Nicoderm, I mean, he's slapping sticker after, not sticker, what do you call it?
Been there. I don't
know
what
he's
loaded with patches. He's got the patches. And he's got the gum.
And he's chewing the gum, whatever. Just want to say, once again, I've stopped smoking for now. Oh, it's 6 months this week. And no patches, no gum. Cold turkey all the way. But when he finally tells Butcher where he was, because Butcher was kind of pissed off that he, kind of blew off their trip earlier, and he tells him about Little Nina, you know that Butcher already knows who she is. And then he realizes, and all of a sudden you see an idea come to him, and he wants to meet with little Nina because he figures by meeting with her, somehow this will lead to them going to Russia and the whole connection with the Russians that took Soldier Boy. I think Butcher is still of the belief that there is some sort of weapon that they are going to find that they can use to kill Homelander. Whereas I suspect the only weapon they may find is actually Soldier Boy himself. We'll see.
I'm inclined to believe that the weapon's going to turn out to be something to do with Ryan.
Okay.
That's my theory as of right now.
Well, my feeling with Ryan is that in a weird way, that's sort of something that they've set up from the get-go, where they're keeping him from Homelander, obviously. But also, if you keep him with them and he's raised in a positive environment, and he can thus be turned against his father, you're bringing up someone who basically might have the same abilities, might end up even being stronger.
Yep.
Than his dad. So in a weird way, one could see, especially with Grace involved, and you know, she may seem all like she's all great again now, but considering her past and what she does, doesn't mean it's going to stay that way.
Right.
He could be getting groomed to be that kind of weapon. Anyway, it's vague. Wow, it's actually somewhat vaguely reminiscent of a famous DC comic storyline, which has actually played its part in many animated things over the last 25, 30 years, where there was a clone made of Superman using Superman and Luthor's DNA, creating a Superboy, so to speak. But the Luthor's motivation behind it originally was he was essentially creating this descendant of Superman as a weapon to take down Superman. So Ryan could be seen I could see the government thinking they might be able to use him as a weapon to take down Homelander. So that's interesting. I'm curious to see where they'll go with all this. For anyone who's actually read the comics out there, they probably know what's going to happen. But it's an interesting one. So where are we? We have to get to the end of the show. So let's see what do we got here. We got that conversation between Huey and Butcher. That Huey is the one guy who gets it.
Yep.
Gloves are off. All right, Huey's going to be a badass. Butcher's a badass. They're going to bond here. It's going to be nice. It's going to be great. And then Butcher pukes in his face.
I love it. I hate it, but I love it. the face, Huey's face, it was...
What the fuck?
If you can get puked on, that's the face to have, man.
What the fuck?
It was just like, what the shit just happened?
And swinging back to the reality show, we do find out that Supersonic is... For a minute there, it sounds like he's going to take her advice and heed her warnings and leave, but then he decides he's not going to because apparently, you know, he remembers the way she helped him when he was younger, so he doesn't want to leave her behind, whatever. We'll see what happens. My first thought was like, dude, you are not going to live. You're not going to make it out of the season
right.
alive.
Yeah.
There's just no way. I'm just trying to think what kind of creative way they're going to come up with to kill you off at this point.
Yep.
But we do get to the end. At the end of the reality show, you know, where they're making their choices. But Homelander obviously changes the script. He brings in the deep. And then he goes one step further. And either we knew this was coming or not, or they, I don't know, but claiming that he and Starlight are a couple. Hashtag Homelight. Love they got the hashtag.
Oh, shit.
And right off the bat, everyone's going, it's testing great already.
Oh, and just like when he's done doing that and it pans over to all the crew. Oh, I lost my shit. That was so funny. They're just like, that's amazing.
And then when they film the additional take, and then she takes it upon herself to go in for the kiss, and that's when we end with the hand being clenched behind her or whatever. Oof. And I'm like, we already had the scene earlier where Huey had, they were on the phone, and she definitely wants out of the situation. And Huey makes it clear that she has to stay in. Mm-hmm. But she, and of course, now it's gotten worse because, as Homelander had pointed out in that earlier scene, in his mind, they don't have leverage anymore. He doesn't care if they reveal that fucking video at this point.
Nope.
If it goes that way. So she's really screwed.
Yeah.
The only thing one can hope at this point is that he is, if not, again, haven't seen the next episode or anything later, but based on what we know of the character so far, in my mind, he's going to do this for the cameras. I don't think he's actually going to do it where they're going to do anything between the two of them off camera, so to speak. I don't think he's not going to, he's not the deep. I don't think he's going
to do right, that. Right. I see what you're alluding to. Yeah. I do not think that it will go there. The interesting thing about this scene is also Supersonic's face.
Oh yeah.
And recognizing, you know, he was raised and groomed in the same kind of respect that she was. So he knows her. He knows that this is bullshit and that what's happening is really, really fucked up. And it's his first real realization of how messed up it is.
Right. It's kind of like, she told you things were bad. Now,
right.
Here's where it starts. And like I said, that is essentially the end of the episode. I genuinely don't have anything else to say about these three. I assume you don't, but I shouldn't make that assumption. Is there?
I don't really. I think that it is, again, you know, we got a really excellent setup. We got Queen Maeve for just a minute. I would say that there's been not much with her happening since, you know, with the drop off to Butcher other than that.
Right.
So I'm expecting we will probably see a bit more of her in the next episode and that we're going to be making some moves towards Russia.
Yeah, I would suspect it is almost weird that Queen Maeve has barely been a presence in all three of these episodes, other than initiating the plot with Butcher as far as to look into payback. Yeah. So waiting on that, especially because she was definitely one of the more defining characters of the seven previous to this, and so kind of wondering what happened between her and her girlfriend at the time and where that is at this point. I don't remember. If they killed someone off and I don't remember it, I apologize again. I just didn't rewatch any of season two. Now, as of this recording, they have not announced the next episode title, so I don't know what it is. They've only revealed one future episode title. That's the sixth episode of the season. I'm not going to say what that title is, but I'm going to tell you this. I'm pretty sure that episode, again, it's going to be the sixth episode of the season, so that's like three weeks. That episode is probably going to generate the... Think of it this way. If you think what happened in the first 12 minutes of the first episode got some hubbub online, I'm pretty sure this one should top that. I suspect it will. I could be wrong. Should I just say what the title is? It's one word. It's not really a spoiler. Eh. Is it a spoiler? It's a title. I'm going to say what it is.
It's not a spoiler. It's The Boys. You better say it.
The title is Herogasm. And I know what that means. I'm not going to say what it means now. For those who aren't familiar, it's like, wait for it. Alrighty then, with all that said, if you enjoyed this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Now remember, it's Serious TV Drama Podcast, not Serious Drama TV Podcast, like one person keeps saying it is, who's a podcaster somewhere else. Anyway, like the page and enjoy. Come on, you're supposed to laugh at that, Jamie. Wow. Hey, it's not my fault our Stranger Things podcast was better. Enjoy, like the page, enjoy, you hate me now, enjoy talking about shows like The Boys, Better Call Saul, and so many others. You can go find our podcast pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Because you're listening to it, you found it somewhere. You can find it on Spotify and Amazon Music and Apple Podcasts. But you know what? Why don't you just go to stvdpodcast.podbean.com and you can find all 346 of our podcasts.
We like the Podbean.
I love it. It's even though I just realized recently that the phrase or word Podbean sounds like something else kind of to me now. Maybe I'm watching too much Boys and I'm just thinking, you know, not a male body part. Figure it out yourself. Anyway.
I know what we're talking about.
Anyway, you can find us on Instagram. I wish someone would. Our handle there is Serious TV Drama, all is one word. And lastly, finally, you can also find us on Twitter. I think our Twitter account just had a back and forth with Daniel Feinberg the other day, disagreeing with him. See, cool conversations like that you'll find on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. Again, that's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. Again, we will be back next week, hopefully a little earlier, with our coverage of the next episode. Man, there is going to be a lot to watch this weekend, or even starting now. I haven't seen today's Ms. Marvel or Obi-Wan. Friday, you get the new Boys episode. For All Mankind premiere, season 3 premieres on Friday. Peaky Blinders season 6, the whole thing is released on Friday. Sunday, Evil comes back to Paramount Plus. If you haven't watched it yet and you have Paramount Plus, people, watch that show. I'm telling you. Check out that show. All you Lost people, if you like Michael Emerson, oh my God, watch Evil. Freaking June, man. Freaking June. That's all I'm saying.
It's a busy month, no doubt.
Anyway, that's pretty much it. And for anyone out there, since I actually jokingly mentioned Stranger Things a few moments ago, for anyone out there who's still watching it and hasn't finished it as a favor, or if you just finished it, I would highly recommend checking out our podcast from last week on Stranger Things. It was pretty damn good. So check it out. And that's pretty much it. Jamie did one with the Crazy Hank, and I believe you can still track that down on YouTube and elsewhere as well. So if you put in like Crazy Hank TV and Stranger Things, you should probably find it that way. So you can get to Jamie's point of view on the show as well. See, look at that. I gave you a little plug there.
Spreading the love. And as far as our schedule going forward with the Boys, are we going to be sticking with the same release day as this week, or are we shortening that up?
Let me put it this way. I am not happy the fact that we're releasing a podcast a day before the next episode.
We're not. We're bummed out that it had to work this way.
Yeah, but it's just the way it worked out this time around. My hope is, schedules permitting, that we can record Monday nights and release it on Tuesday. If for any reason that the two of us are able to do it sooner, we will. If we have to do it later, if something comes up, which could always happen, that'll happen. But generally, I think that's what we're going to try to stick with.
All right. So try looking for us at the first half of the week. We'll be here.
Yes. There you go. Anyway, so that's it. Jamie, thank you so much for joining me here. It's always a pleasure to podcast with you.
Yeah, thanks. And thanks again. It's good to be talking about the disgusting, amazingly creative death scenes again.
Oh yeah, you know, it's like, I just hope they blow up some more penises this season.
If it's gonna be violent, it better be creative.
There you go. And with that, good night to all you guys out there, and we will be talking to you next week.